Welcome to Notes from the Western Edge, a monthly half-hour on-demand webcast featuring musicians who create on the edges of jazz, new music, electronics, and a broad expanse of sonic spaces in between. This month, we listen to music from two extraordinary West Coast keyboardists, Denny Zeitlin and John Beasley. At 2 years of age, Denny Zeitlin was already making music, seated on the lap of one of his parents at the piano. That was in 1940 or so. He's still at it today, recording and touring with his trio featuring Buster Williams on bass and Matt Wilson on drums. Add to that his work as a practicing psychiatrist and teacher and his Unlocking the Creative Impulse workshops. Toss in some fly fishing, mountain biking, and wine collecting, and you have one very creative individual whose energy seems to know no bounds. Among John Beasley's most recent gigs were a jazz in the orchestra program led by Christian McBride at Walt Disney Concert Hall in downtown Los Angeles, and a string of gigs with John Hurd's group at Charlie O's Bar and Grill in Van Nuys. Last fall, I heard him with James Brown at the Hollywood Bowl and at the Vic for Jazz in Santa Monica with his own quartet. As you can see, Beasley really gets around. Oh yeah, he worked with Freddie Hubbard and Miles Davis too. What's next? Tune in and find out. I hope you enjoy the show.
When I heard that music, I thought I was shot out of a cannon. It was what I had been waiting to hear all my life.
What did Denny Zeitlin hear in the eighth grade?
You're hearing George Shearing.
And what was it that so excited him?
Here was somebody obviously with classical chops and classical roots, but he's playing this new music and they're making it up as they go along, and it has this rhythmic propulsion. It was so exciting. I was just utterly galvanized by it. And that just shot me into high school, forming jazz groups. This was a suburb of Chicago in the 50s, 1952. Then I began to go to all the jazz clubs, and since I was a tall kid and could pass with a fake ID, I'm going into all these clubs on the north side, on the south side, and listening to music all night and eventually starting to sit in and serving what was really an informal apprenticeship in this music.
Zeitlin's musical odyssey began much earlier.
When I was about two or three, I have the beginnings of fragmentary memories of sitting on the lap of whichever parent was playing the family Steinway. And I would clamber up and put my little hands on their hands as they were traversing the keyboard. I would begin with getting a kinesthetic sense of what it was like to move around a piano. And then shortly thereafter, I began picking out my own melodies and improvising. And from the beginning, that's really where my heart was, is composing and improvising.
Zeitlin's parents encouraged his independent explorations.
I think very wisely, my parents avoided forcing me into formal lessons and let me for several years just sort of find my own way until I asked to study. I was about six or seven. And then I began the formal study of classical piano literature and went through a fair amount of that literature in grade school.
Another of Zeitlin's interests, one that continues to this day, developed very early as well.
I had an uncle who was a psychiatrist in Chicago, and for some reason he liked to talk with me about his work. I was fascinated by it. And even at age six, seven, and eight, I'm asking him all these questions, and he's telling me about what it's like to work with patients. And I began to practice without a license on the playground when I was in second and third grade. Kids seemed to like to come up and talk with me about themselves. I was fascinated. I wanted to be helpful. And I had a sense very early on that I want to do this work. And I knew I was going to be involved in music in some way. I didn't know exactly the shape that would take. But there were these parallel passions that began that early in my life. And fortunately, I didn't have a set of parents that ever took me aside and said, "Well, Denny, it's time for you to decide what you want to do with your life. You have to choose between these two fields." They never put it that way to me. They understood I was involved in both and probably was going to find a way to weave them both into the fabric of my life.
And find a way he did. Zeitlin's business card reads, "Jazz pianist, composer, psychiatrist." While majoring in philosophy at the University of Illinois,
I would come back into Chicago frequently on the weekends and go to jam sessions there and start gigging around Chicago with people like Bobby Cranshaw and Walter Perkins, and playing with Iris Sullivan, and sitting in with Johnny Griffin, Wilbur Ware, Wilbur Campbell, some really wonderful major Chicago players who were very welcoming and supportive to me. Remember early pianists, people like Chris Anderson, a wonderful piano player, unfortunately has this congenital disease, osteogenesis imperfecta, which leaves him blind and with brittle bones, but he would somehow manage to get himself up on the bandstand and play the piano, and what would come out of him was just heartbreakingly beautiful. And I learned a lot from Chris just by talking with him and listening to him, and I would just try to be like an osmotic entity back then, just soaking in as much as I could of what was going on in Chicago.
Zeitlin continued to develop his music while he was a med student at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, sitting in with Gary Bartz's band at the North End Lounge, owned by Bartz's father. He'd study until 1 a.m. or so, and then drive to the club to play until the wee hours. Obviously, in those days, Zeitlin could get by on less than 8 hours of sleep. We're listening to Quiet Now, a solo version of one of Zeitlin's most well-known tunes, released on Max Jazz in 2005. Earlier, we heard You and the Night and the Music, from 2004's Slick Rock, with Buster Williams on bass and Matt Wilson on drums. But here's Zeitlin 40 years earlier.
Once again, the Trident takes extreme pride in presenting an exciting young jazz group, the Denny Zeitlin Trio.
There was a jazz club, now defunct, but then a wonderful world-class jazz club called the Trident in Sausalito, California, right across the Golden Gate Bridge from the city. And so I got a Monday night gig there. For 2.5 years, I had a Monday night gig at the Trident where I could, you know, keep the music developing. I started out playing with Charlie Hayden and Jerry Grinelli.
We're listening to them play St. Thomas by saxophonist Sonny Rollins, honoring a request by someone in the audience. It was the first time the group had ever played the tune. Also on Live at the Trident is Zeitlin's first recording of Quiet Now, a tune that the esteemed pianist Bill Evans recorded more than 9 times and played nightly for 15 years. But Denny Zeitlin is not always quiet.
I had begun to get a bit impatient with what I felt were the limitations of the acoustic piano sound. As much as I love the instrument, it's a well-tempered instrument, and you can't bend notes or play between the notes the way saxophone players can or guitar players can, and I was envious of that ability and wanted to be able to, in essence, be more of an orchestra. So in the mid-60s, I began to ask engineers to begin to create modules and equipment for me. This was long before you could walk into your corner music store and walk out with a synthesizer under your arm all ready to go. This was the days of the Moog synthesizer when you take patch cords and it take you 5 minutes to patch a whole series of things in before you could get a good go. So it was very primordial. I got people to develop stuff for me, and over a period of a year, I developed a rig that looked like a 747 cockpit. Six or seven keyboards, miles of cords, sound-altering instruments that I would play with my feet with pedals and switches. And I had a ball with this. I used this rig for about 10 years, playing with George Marsh on drums and Mel Graves on bass. Did a couple albums in that genre for a company called 1750 Arch Records. One was called Expansion and one was called Syzygy.
We're listening to El Fuego de las Montañas, The Fire from the Mountains, from 1975's Expansion. Zeitlin's work with synthesizers prepared him well for his next project, one that took him far from the world of jazz clubs to the Hollywood soundstage. In 1977, director Philip Kaufman asked him to compose the score for his film Invasion of the Body Snatchers. This experience opened up a new musical universe for Zeitlin.
Had to sell his producer on the idea that I could do something that I had never done before, which was write for a symphony orchestra. If I'd been the producer, I don't know that I would have taken a chance on me, but I'm glad that he was willing. And so I plunged into this, took over 10 weeks of work, and it was one of the most exciting, exhilarating, and exhausting experiences of my life. The opportunity to have a symphony orchestra explode into the music you've written is something very, very special.
Today, true to a form that must be deeply ingrained in him, Zeitlin has many fires burning. His music, his psychiatric practice and teaching, his Unlocking the Creative Impulse workshops, and a new one, his website at www.dennyzeitlin.com, where you can check it all out. What ties it all together, though, is a quest that has been with him from day one.
In the deepest sense, there is an actual merger, where you become so immersed in, say, doing music, that you don't even have the conscious experience of playing it. You're hearing it. You're as much in the audience somehow as the audience. We're all together in some sort of audience kind of space hearing music being played. When that happens, that is the most delicious kind of creative experience that I know. And the analog in my office with a patient is if I'm able to empathize deeply enough with a patient, with his story, with her dream, with her memories, I literally enter that life and for the moment lose the positional sense of myself in an effort to truly understand in a very deep feeling way what their experience was. And in that sense, there's a merger again. So I think this merger experience is very much at the core of both of those activities.
In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. I have a question for you, but before I ask it, let's listen. What do Miles Davis, James Brown, Sergio Mendez, Steely Dan, and the Cheers and American Idol TV shows all have in common? Each one has featured the keyboard artistry of John Beasley.
I played with Miles for about a year in 1989, right after he released A Mandala. That was a great experience. I mean, in a lot of ways, I feel like I matured as a human being, aside from music, well, along with the music that I learned from him. My ears were never as good as, it was just like radar, you know, and the way he commands you to listen without saying a word, just by playing, and his intensity, and being able to comp for that and be exposed to that was all you could imagine.
John Beasley's musical education didn't begin or end with his time with Miles Davis. It simply continued the path that began in Louisiana and Texas, growing up in a home with two very musical parents.
My mom stuck a trumpet in my mouth when I was six and gave me a little couple lessons, and I marched in her band. And then at eight, they got me piano lessons that I wasn't too thrilled about, but they made me go. And I was in the sports and stuff, and music was, you know, just kind of a fun thing to do. And then I took oboe up during school, junior high, and played that all through high school, and got into jazz. I was about 13 or 14. You know, of course, my dad was always playing it around the house, playing Art Blakey. And I guess my first real lock was Jimmy Smith, because it was funky, you know. And I remember him and Bobby Timmons, that I really liked that soul kind of sound back then. And then he brought me home some Blood, Sweat, and Tears records.
Music runs in Beasley's family. His maternal grandfather played trombone all over Louisiana and Arkansas in what were then known as territory bands. From 1918 to 1920, he played with Paul Whiteman and others on many of the Southern California piers over the Pacific Ocean. Then it was back to Arkansas to teach and to raise a family. Beasley's mother is a brass instrumentalist and taught as one of the first female band directors after her student days at North Texas State. His father is a composer and pianist and taught for many years at North Texas. The Blood, Sweat, and Tears album his father brought home had a pretty big impact on the young Beasley.
I put a band together to play like Lucretia McEvil and all these, all my friends, you know. And I was trying to play guitar at that point, and not very well, you know, not very good. And the piano, it was a little girl that played piano, got lost interest, and she stopped coming. So I just wandered over the piano one day. I was already taking lessons, and just stepped into that role by accident.
Once Beasley heard Herbie Hancock, he never turned back.
Then my dad brought home Maiden Voyage, and that just turned everything around for me. There was no more, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, or, you know, I just totally got engrossed myself in that, and then went back further, of course, to Bud and everybody.
Bud and everybody. For Beasley, that everybody includes not just jazz greats like Bud Powell and Herbie Hancock, but also composers such as Bartok, Scriabin, and Bach. From the atmospherics of the piece we just heard, Les Mr. Yes, Part 1, from One Live Night on Beasley's own label, to the pure pianistic expressions of Deliberation from Nuances, his album of improvised piano solos, Beasley cuts a very wide swath through the world of keyboard music. In his mid-20s, he returned to the classical music of his youth and began a method of practicing the music of other composers that helped him develop his own approach to both composition and performance. In his liner notes, Beasley writes, "This tableau, Nuances, was improvised as it was being recorded. My intention was to make a musical journal of my stream of consciousness at a given moment, keeping in mind the parameters of length, song form, blues form, and simplicity." After high school, Beasley decided to forego college and to enter the world of the jobbing musician in Los Angeles, where his parents were teaching. That decision ended up leading him far and wide.
I played with great older musicians that I learned on the stand. I went old school. One of my first gigs was playing with John B. Williams out here, great bass player. At that time, he was with The Tonight Show, but, you know, he played with everybody. And then Ralph Penland was on the scene. And then by the time I was 20 or so, I got the gig with Sergio Mendez and learned about Brazilian music from him. And when all of us started going all over the world with him, and you know, there was other local bands, and then Freddie Hubbard, you know, I was like in my 20s with Freddie, and I spent about 8 years playing off and on with Freddie.
In between jazz gigs, Beasley also picked up work as a session player, which led to work as a composer of songs and additional music for films and TV shows, including Star Trek The Next Generation, Fame, Family Ties, Cheers, A Bug's Life, The Green Mile, Finding Nemo, Aaron Brockovich, and one of my favorite shows, Lily Tomlin's The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe. He's also worked as an arranger and rehearsal pianist for American Idol, helping the contestants to choose a song, arranging it for them, and coaching their performance before they sing it in front of millions of people. I've barely scratched the surface here. To read all about it, just go to BeasleyMusic.com and click on Film TV Credits. With all of this behind him, I asked Beasley what he's working on now.
Trying to find a sound. You know, that's what's really important for me, is not to go in the studio and just record tunes. I want to develop a sound. I mean, every great piano trio has a sound.
Let's close by listening to John Beasley's sound from his album Surfacing. This is Song for Dub, with Beasley on acoustic piano, Robert Hurst on bass, and Vinnie Colaiuta on drums. In Los Angeles, for Notes on the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'll see you next month with a couple of surprises. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge and Fresh Ears Media, I'm Richard Paskey. Until next time, keep listening.